By way of introduction, I'd like to take you back in time. A time to when I was in elementary school in the fourth grade in Mr. Paulson's class in Rodale, California, small city, small town in the San Francisco Bay Area. This was going to be a special day. We would have our normal class like we normally would in the morning, and then the afternoon would be filled with candy, sweets. Back then, late 70s, early 80s, we were allowed to have that in school. And we'd be getting together, playing games, having a small party, having a card exchange with these little red cards that asked, "Do you want to be my Valentine? Will you be my Valentine?" This mortified me. I was a young, socially awkward introvert. And interacting with girls, especially that weren't my sisters, it might as well have been the end of the world. Within the next few days, it will be February 14th. Millions of young people, couples, and older couples will be having romantic dinners, receiving flowers, getting engaged, going to parties or bars in hopes of finding their true loves. For many, Valentine's Day is a day to find new love and reaffirm a couple's love for each other. Over the last couple centuries, Valentine's has developed into a secular holiday that is celebrated by religious and non-religious peoples. In this sermonette, we are going to briefly explore the highlights of its origins and ask the question, is it appropriate for Christians to participate in the celebration or its celebration? Let's start with the person by the name Valentine or Valentines. According to most historians, and according to the Catholic Church, this day was founded by the name of an individual that was martyred on behalf of the church that promoted love in the 3rd century AD. Most historians recognize at least two people named Valentine that was martyred during the month of February. Some have even suggested up to 14. The first Valentine performed secret weddings, and this wasn't too unusual because Christianity back then was illegal by the Roman Empire, and the penalty of breaking Roman rule was death. So he was supposedly, according to legend, put to death on February 14th. The second Valentine, as the legend goes, tried to convert the Emperor Claudius in the 3rd century. This enraged Claudius, so he sentenced him to death. While awaiting his sentence, as the legend goes, he tutored the jailer's daughter, blind daughter, and they fell in love. And as the legend goes, just before the night before his execution, sometime in February, he wrote a letter and penned it, signed it, "From your Valentine." Most scholars agree that Valentine was not actually probably a real person. It is more likely that he is a construct of many different people named Valentine during the 3rd century that died during the month of February, or an idealized version that later was converted into a legend of several different bishops into one person. So it's unlikely that Valentine's association with love of a real person is unlikely. So we need to gather or look into different sources. Where did this come from, this day? Some in the ancient world believed that birds picked a mate and began breeding on the 14th of February. Science has disproved that, even though there may be some species of birds that might start mating in the month of February. But that doesn't lead us to prove that Valentine's is true. Let's investigate deeper. We need to investigate a legend or discuss a legend that begins with the founders of Rome by the name twin boys, Romulus and Remus. As the legend goes, and again, this is not an endorsement of the legend. This is just a reiteration, a telling of the legend, so we can see the roots of this day. Their uncle, King Amulus, ordered these twin boys to be killed in retribution to his sister for breaking her vow of chastity. His servant that was charged with getting rid of the twins felt sorry for them, or whatever, and he put them in a basket into the river Tiber. And according to the legend, the river god floated them down the river into a fig tree, a wild fig tree that was growing near the river. And the basket became tangled in this fig tree. And as the legend goes, a she-wolf rescued them and took care of them for a while. A little bit later, they were adopted by a shepherd and his wife. And as the legend goes, when they grew up or became a little bit older, they found their uncle, the king, killed him. Then they found the cave that the she-wolf took care of them. They named it Lupercal, after the fertility god and also in honor of the she-wolf. To appease the she-wolf, they started a ritual and festival called Lupercalia. And interestingly, it occurred every February between February 13th and 15th. The details are a little uncomfortable, and I apologize for that, and I won't get too much into it. But basically, the way this festival went was the priests, who were called Lupercai, were naked. And on this, during this time, they would sacrifice two male goats and a dog. I'm not sure why they did the dog, but apparently the two male goats represent fertility. Then once the sacrifice was complete, they took the blood, the knife from the blood they used, they took two of the naked Lupercai and wiped it on their foreheads. And then what they would do is they would take milk that was soaked in wool and use that cloth and wipe their foreheads clean. While this was going, they were, according to the stories, they were laughing frantically, crazy. Then after this ritual was complete, they would take the hides of the goats and make strips out of them. And these strips are called February. And actually, that's where we get our month, February, from, is the name of these strips. This other part, I don't know if you can make this stuff up, but it sounds pretty outlandish to me. So what they would do is they would take these strips, and they would run out of the cave laughing naked, mind you, into the outside of the cave and onto an open area. And whatever woman they saw, they would lash this woman with these lashes. And apparently, some of these women would bear it a little bit so they could get whipped. And the thought behind it was that these consecration laughs increase fertility. And so that's why this was done. And also, interestingly, during this festival, men would draw women's name out of a jar. Sounds somewhat familiar. And that couple would be matched up or hooked up during the course of this festival. Sometimes they stayed together until the next year's Lupercal. So let's fast forward into so-called acceptance into Christianity. In the late 5th century AD, Pope Galius I eliminated the pagan festival and replaced it with February 14th, Valentine's Day, commemorating Valentine's martyrdom. Due to the Catholic tradition of Valentine as the patron of lovers, he became synonymous with love and romance. Same pillar, different name. And interestingly, I'd like to contrast the pillars of this festival and Valentine and the symbols used. One is the color red. In Lupercalia, the color of the red represented the sacrificial blood. The color white, as you probably guessed it, represents the cleaning of the foreheads. The birds and doves, courtship and procreation. Drawing of names out of a jar or bowls. Temporary hookup for the purposes of conceiving, another fertility rite. And the following two I find kind of interesting. You have Cupid. And this seems to represent the Lupercalia priest. And then you have the arrow that hits the heart of lovers. Well, that seems to represent the lashing that the women got in to increase the fertility. Interesting. Is this a harmless holiday? Should it be celebrated by Christians? Over the last couple of centuries, Valentine's has transitioned from a cultic to a secular holiday. It's celebrated by almost anybody, whether you're religious or not. Is there any harm in celebrating this holiday. What does God say about it? What does the scriptures say? What does the Bible say about it? What does it say about celebrating festivals and traditions that are mixed with ungodly customs? Is it okay to, if they have been so-called Christianized or secularized? I'd like you to turn to Deuteronomy 12, and we're going to start in verse 29. Again, Deuteronomy 12, verse 29. When the Lord your God cuts off from you before the nations which you go to dispossess, you shall displace them and dwell in their land. Take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them after they are destroyed from before you, that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I will also do likewise. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. For every abomination to the Lord which he hates, they have done to their own gods. For they even burn their sons and daughters in the fire to their gods. Verse 32. Whatever I command you, be careful to observe it. You shall not add nor take away from it. This passage tells us that God's people are not to mix ungodly worship with godly worship in religious festivals or in other elements of life. And in verse 32, he even emphasizes that we are to be careful not to add or take away. By extension, we are not to take ungodly practice, add to God or worship with God, and we being the temples of God, if we participate in ungodly worship or things that have elements in it, we pollute that temple. He doesn't want us anything to do with it. The question, do we? When a festival, holiday tradition, and or secular holiday that is rooted in paganism, even if it has been so-called Christianized or secularized, God does not find this acceptable, the blending of pagan practices with good. And I'll read Deuteronomy 16:22. You shall not set up a sacred pillar which the Lord your God hates. By participating in false festivals, even secularized, sacred pillars are set up in honor of false God. God hates this. It doesn't matter how it's labeled, painted, flowered into nice language, presented as being good. It's good for the children. It's good for us. Make no mistake about it. Under the hood, it is demon worship. No doubt about it. Paul also strongly warns against the blending of good and evil. We're going to start in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 14, jump down to 18 through 20. Again, 1 Corinthians 10, 14. And the context is Paul is reminding the brethren in Corinthia that the things that are recorded in the scriptures are for our own edification, for our own warning, for our own admonition, to review them and take heed of what they did and don't make the same mistakes as our forefathers may have made. Therefore, my beloved, starting verse 14, flee from idolatry. Dropping down to the first part of 18, are not those who eat of the sacrifice partakers of the altar? What am I saying then? Is that an idol is anything? Or what is offered to idols is anything? Rather, that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons, not to God. I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. Verse 21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and the table of demons. By the grace of our Savior, we being the people of God, are warned not to indulge or participate in practices that are rooted in evil. It doesn't matter what the color of the pillar is, how it's painted, or what they're called. They still honor a false god, and God does not abide where evil abides. So in conclusion, we've briefly explored the origins of Valentine's and seen how it stems from false worship of gods. We see admonition and warning in scriptures. People of God are not to participate in celebrations and traditions that are rooted in ungodly worship, even if it has developed into a secular celebration. Going back to my fourth grade class celebration, it was fun, admit it. We got interactive people. We got candy. We were having games. We didn't have to do schoolwork. It was great. But isn't that the trap? Isn't that the trap, how Satan ensnares us? It looks good. We should participate. Oh, it may be a little bit of bad there, but we don't do it for that purpose. We do it for the good. He appeals to our sense of fun and excitement, luring us to worship false gods and mixing with good and evil. Going back to Romans 10:21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and the table of demons. What is our choice? What is my choice? What is your choice? Do we participate or don't we?